Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now reconvened.
Please call the case.
Case number SCAP-15-599, Leone et al. Versus County of Maui. Arguing for appellants Douglas Leone and Patricia A. Perkins Leone, Andrew V. Beeman. Also appearing for the appellants, Leroy E. Colon and Daniel J. Chen. Arguing for appellees County of Maui and William Spence, Director of the Department of Planning of the County of Maui, Brian A. Bilberry, Deputy Corporation Counsel. Also appearing for the appellees, Patrick Wong, Corporation Counsel. Argument on the merits.
All right, good morning to our attorneys. Are you all ready to proceed today?
Yes, sir.
All right, and my understanding again, Mr. Beeman, you'll be going first. You reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Bilberry will give you a 10-minute warning in your argument. Very well, please proceed.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. May it please the court. The evidence presented to the jury in this case allows only one reasonable conclusion, and that is, as a matter of law, the county took the Leone's land for a public beach because they had no economically beneficial use of their land after October 25th, 2007. The only evidence presented to the jury that could possibly have supported their conclusion on this subject was the testimony of appraiser Ted Yamamura, given over our objections, that investment use, his term, can be an economically beneficial use of land. Without that testimony, there was no evidence at all from which the jury could find any economically beneficial use after the taking on October 25th, 2007.
Mr. Beeman, I understand that the Leone's intended to use the property for residential property, but wasn't there also testimony regarding a possible, and this isn't what they intended, but for beach concessions?
There was no testimony at all regarding beach concessions. There were a number of questions asked regarding possible commercial use of the property, to which the court sustained a number of objections, particularly by Deputy Planning Director Michelle McClain. There is no evidence that any commercial use or concessionary use could be made for several reasons. First of all, there is a declaration of covenants and restrictions encumbering the property, which limits it to residential use only. And under Bowles versus United States, in an inverse condemnation case, the government is stuck with that declaration. Second, the county ordinance with respect to commercial uses specifically permits commercial uses only under the supervision of the government agency in charge. And I can quote that for you if you'd like.
I just want to be clear with your position, Mr. Beeman. The restrictive covenants that are entered into that would control the use of property are agreements of a private nature, correct?
Yes, they are.
And it's your position that the restrictive covenants can obligate the government to a particular land use, even if the government's land use designation, zoning, or perhaps a designation as to a particular type of land use under the state laws, notwithstanding the government designation of the land use, the government would have to acknowledge that the usage would be evaluated in terms of the private agreements that underlie the restrictive covenants.
Not quite. What Bowles versus United States holds is that when land is encumbered by private covenants and the government takes action that deprives the owner of economically beneficial use, the government takes the land as it finds it. That is, in the words of the Bowles court, if the government drops a firebomb on your house, the government is not entitled to say, well, your house burned down because it was made of wood and not of concrete.
On the other hand, if the land use designation, for example, is for hotel use, but the developer enters into restrictive covenants that make it impossible for a hotel use, it may be that that particular usage is something that can be considered as well in evaluating the economic use, correct?
Well, if you're talking about a private declaration, I would submit that under those circumstances, you would have a question as to whether there's a self-inflicted injury. In this particular case, the protective covenants at issue, the declaration of covenants and restrictions, were recorded and annexed to this particular property before 2001, when the law began to prohibit the uses that were inconsistent with the park designation on the community plan. So this is not quite the hypothetical that you posed.
Why couldn't the jury have concluded that it was your burden to show there was no beneficial use, correct?
It was our burden to present evidence of that in the initial case, which we did, and the court agreed with us. It was the county's burden at that point to present evidence, to produce evidence that there.
Where do you get that from?
Oh, from Bowles versus United States, from Resource Investments, from the New Jersey case of Love Ladies Harbors, a number of court of claims decisions.
Well, so, is that a requirement that we have to adopt some standard, which seems to say that you only have to produce some use and then the burden switches to the defense?
This is like in employment cases where you have the burden shifting analysis.
And hasn't that, well, the employment situation for number one, it's my understanding that normally is a motion for summary judgment procedure. And secondly, it's been significantly criticized across the country in law review articles because the question is why should there be a different standard of employment discrimination than all other torts?
Well, with respect, in a case that I had argued before in this court, Shopee versus Gucci, this court did approve the McDonnell Douglas burden shifting analysis.
Summary judgment case.
That was at the summary judgment level.
That's correct. Yeah. We're talking about a trial.
Right.
Jury instruction, which you requested and which was refused. But let's go back to my question,
sure.
Which is the burden, whether we say it's the entire burden or there's burden switching, it's your burden to show no beneficial use ultimately, correct?
It is our burden of proof ultimately.
Okay. So could the jury have concluded, look, the county initially had purchased two of these properties for park. What's the issue with the you potentially selling this to the county and using this for another beach piece? In fact, I thought the county, there were some citizens who came forward to donate some money. So why isn't that a beneficial use? That because it's your burden to show no beneficial use at all.
Okay. And the answer to your question is in the Lost Tree Village Corporation versus United States case recently decided by the Federal Circuit. That was a case where there was some wetlands that were denied a fill permit, and there was the resulting taking was about 99% of the land's value. The court said whether a government action constitutes a taking is a question of law based on underlying facts. In that case, the government argued, similar to the argument you just made, that the landowner's ability to sell the property, whether to the government or anybody else, amounts to an economic use. And the court rejected that argument. A similar argument was presented.
Are you saying any time a piece of property can be sold to the government, it's not? I haven't read that. But in other words, if the county was willing to pay double what you folks paid for it, that wouldn't be an economic use?
That would be the Del Monte Dunes case. In the Del Monte Dunes case, the landowner actually sold the property to the government for more than he paid for it. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said, that doesn't save you from the consequences of a taking, of rendering the property valueless without any economically beneficial use. But if I may go on, in Lost Tree 2, this issue has come up three times that I'm aware of. Del Monte Dunes, Resource Investments, where in a footnote the court said, this argument by the government is patently absurd. And in Lost Tree 2, where the court went on to say, speculative land uses are not considered as part of a takings inquiry, and it is unreasonable to define land use as including the sale of land. And that's why the county in this case has made no effort at all to defend Judge Cahill's decision to allow the testimony of Mr. Yamamura, because it is simply contrary to law. The ability of the landowner to sell the property post-takings has no bearing on whether the landowner has been deprived of all economically beneficial use.
Could you come back to the possible commercial use of that property? So there was no admissible evidence in support of the theory that this land could have been put to some commercial use?
Certainly. The relevant ordinance provides that within residential districts, the following uses shall be permitted.
I'm talking about expert testimony. Was there any testimony from the witnesses regarding that possibility, apart from the application of the ordinances and then with regard to the ordinances?
Sure. The county made efforts to put on such testimony, but it was rejected properly by Judge Cahill for lack of foundation. The county was not able to establish any economically viable commercial use of the property.
What about cross-examination of Mr. Sugimura?
The cross-examination of Mr. Sugimura did not go exactly as the county has represented to you in the briefs it went.
Well, I'm looking at the transcript.
Take a look at the transcript. Effectively, what happened was that one of the jurors asked Mr. Sugimura, could you have a concession stand on this property? And Mr. Sugimura said no, because any commercial use has to be operated under the control of the government agency, under the county. And
Mr. Milbury said it doesn't have to be control, it's just supervision, as I recall.
Right, and there was a long discussion of the semantic difference between control and supervision. And he is correct. It requires the use to be under the supervision of the government agency in charge of the park. That's what the ordinance says. But Mr. Sugimura certainly did not admit that his original conclusion that the Leonis have no economically viable use was incorrect. In fact, if you read the testimony, what he ultimately concluded effectively was, Mr. Bilberry, you and I will have to disagree on that point. So there was no concession along those lines. To continue, effectively, the county's own admissions in this case establish a lack of economically viable use. At an earlier stage of the proceedings, before we went to the Inmate Court of Appeals, the county admitted, first, that park designation will not permit the Leonis to build a single-family dwelling because the SMA rules require that the proposed action must be consistent with the community plan, and therefore their 2007 application could not be processed. We've taken the position in our papers that the county is bound by principles of judicial estoppel to those admissions, and the county has no response at all to that argument.
Can I interrupt you there, Mr.
Yes.
Beeman? I'm sorry, but while you're on this point of the obligation of the county, this parcel was purchased in the year 2000, and the Kihei McKenna community plan that prohibited single family predated that. On the other hand, the zoning would suggest, I guess, that single family residence could be appropriate. So what was, in your view, the duty of the county in the situation in which there appears to be an ordinance that says they're supposed to comply with the community plan?
In my view, the duty of the county was to do what all municipalities do, and that is to enact zoning ordinances in conformity to and in accordance with a comprehensive general plan, as required by Section 46.4 of the revised statutes. In our view, the county, when the Planning Commission deliberately and repeatedly declined to harmonize the plan and the zoning in this case, it did so with the stated purpose and intention of blocking these landowners from building on their own property.
Did they block the landowners? I thought almost all of them had built houses.
Well, ultimately,
aren't you the only folks who haven't?
I'm sorry?
Haven't virtually everybody built houses on these lots?
Yes. Before
so they effectively haven't blocked. It seems like it was your unilateral decision, maybe back in 2004, when you guys you didn't like the fact that that your proposed plan was going to have some, that they weren't enthusiastic about it because it was going to block some of the view.
Before 2003, the county planning director approved homes at Pelawaya Beach, understanding that and having been advised by the Corporation Council that the county is going to get sued if he didn't do that. After 2003, Planning Director Michael Foley began to enforce the law. What he said was, if you are inconsistent with the plan, I will not allow you to build. And that was the regime for a period of 9 years, until 2012, when the county again began giving permission to these landowners to build.
Didn't your co-defendant on appeal have their, even before your trial in this case, when were they able to build?
The Larsons?
Yes.
They were permitted, they received their SMA exemptions in 2013 and 2015. And that was obviously in response to the fact that they had sued the county over this. The rationale, if you review the Larson's SMA exemptions, the rationale given by the planning director was that the intent, which he somehow magically divines, of the park designation has been fulfilled by virtue of the fact that the two of the lots have been acquired by the county, and therefore there is a park there. But that in our view, doesn't necessarily justify his action. If, for example, the Leonis were to receive permission to build, if they were to get such an exemption today,
why?
Maui tomorrow would be free to sue them to have their house built.
Well, so, question, you know, I realize that this is kind of like going back at this point, and I realize that this court rejected cert of the ICA's original opinion on ripeness, but, you know, Palazzolo says that a takings claim is ripe once the agency interprets its regulations as precluding any development and determines that the proposed use does not qualify for special exemption.
Yes.
So when did the county decide that this proposed use did not qualify for a special exemption?
On October 25th, 2007, the plan admits of no special exemptions. The plan permits no variance.
Okay, so how did the Larsons get it then?
How did the Larsons get it? As I've just explained, the current planning director essentially said, I have somehow divined what the intent of the law was.
Did you go back in 2012 to request a special exemption?
No. At that point, the ability to build on the property had been destroyed.
And but why was that?
Because in 2011,
the tsunami and okay, so is that a regulatory taking?
This is a takings case, as you say. If I steal your car and park it in front of my house, and it is struck by lightning while it's parked in front of my house, I cannot make you whole by towing the burned hulk back to you the next day and saying, I'm sorry. The event that occurred in 2011 is post-takings. Our view is that everything that happens after October 25th, 2007 is irrelevant, with the limited exception of the ripeness issue that you described. And the ICA correctly determined that under Williamson County, the October 25th, 2000 letter was a final decision ripening the claim.
Okay, there's a difference between ripeness and showing no beneficial use. And you just said it's your view that everything that happened after 2007 didn't matter. And my suggestion, when I look at the jury instructions and when I look at the law, what the court instructed when it gave that the land has economic beneficial if under the applicable regulations all three of the following are true. And the applicable regulations included this, and this was also instructed by the court. The Kihei McKenna Community Plan is law, and therefore the power to amend the community plan rests with the Maui County Council. The county may approve an amendment only by ordinance, which may be submitted to the mayor and either approved or vetoed. And I believe that, if I remember correctly, that somebody testified that over 22 dozen times they had been able to get an amendment. So why couldn't the jury conclude, based on the jury instructions, that, heck, there's nothing to preclude these folks from going and getting an amendment. It's been done lots and lots of times. There are landowners, they're not concerning whether there's building, but there's landowners who've gone through that process, and clearly the jury instructions enable them to allow the jury to make an inference. Heck, these people haven't been shut out. They have a possibility.
As the Intermediate Court of Appeals properly held, the community plan is law. And a landowner has no obligation to go and seek a change of law before filing an inverse condemnation
case. You're correct.
Case.
They have no obligation, and they may bring the case. But that is a completely different issue as whether or not they have to prove no beneficial use. And that's... And so the question was, in this case, did you prove no beneficial use when there is a procedure available that had been commonly used, and not only by an expert that they had apparently previously hired, but the other folks who were around you have all been able to do it successfully?
Well, that's not true that they were able to do it successfully. But let me address your question with respect to the 2004 procedure. What happened in 2004, and this is where the county really has misstated the facts. The Leonis actually were more proactive than the other lot owners in seeking approvals. In 2004, they took the extraordinary step of going to the planning director and saying, through their consultants, and saying, will you agree to an amendment of the community plan to residential for our lot only, not for all nine lots, but for our lot only? And the response from the planning director was, I would agree to support such an amendment, which certainly doesn't guarantee you get it. You've got to go to the commission and then the council and the mayor. But I will support it only if you give up 40% of your land for a view corridor. At that point, Doug Leone said, you know, it's...
Give up your land? In other words...
Give up 40% of your land for a view corridor.
Excuse me. I'm not sure if I understand. In other words, they required you to take 40% and deed over 40%, or was there restrictions on a view corridor regarding 40%?
No. The letter from the planning director to the consultant, Monikio and Haraga, from 2004 says... there are several conditions that we will require before we would even support your request for a plan amendment for your land. And one of those is a requirement of the creation of a 40% view corridor. Whether that would be by conveyance, easement, negative easement, or something else, he's not specific. But that was, that is clearly an improper exaction under Dolan versus City of Tigard, which says you must, if the government is going to impose an exaction like that, it must be roughly proportional to the harm that is being addressed.
Let's assume that's true. You have to show no beneficial use. By your argument, you've just shown a very significant use that was viable for the property. Maybe not all that you wanted.
On the contrary, the director's support, if given the political climate before the Planning Commission, if you read the minutes of the Planning Commission's meetings in 2007 and 2008, it is crystal clear that the planning commissioners did not support an amendment of the community plan specifically because they wanted the public to be able to park on private lots. As Commissioner Iaconetti said, if we decide no action on this thing, then the public gets to keep its beach and the landowners cannot build on the land that they own. If you read John Gart's statements, they're to the same effect. If you read Commissioner Jonathan Starr's statements, he said, I don't think the property owners are the best stewards of this property.
What is the economically beneficial use that your client was requesting?
The construction of a house.
Okay, so how does the 40% view corridor affect that economically beneficial use in terms of they would have been able to build a house, right?
Well, again, it's an improper exaction. Under Dolan, what Dolan says...
Is that under an appeal? I mean, is that being... That case never came up.
The point is you don't even get to first base because the planning director...
What are you saying is the regulatory taking here? What was the taking?
The regulatory taking occurs on October 25th, 2007, when the planning director refuses to process the application. And as this court observed in Gatry versus Blaine, virtually an identical letter, a refusal to process an application is a denial of the application. And therefore, when the county planning director rejects the application on that day...
But didn't the planning director also say, you know, unless you go through some special...
No.
There was nothing there?
Could we please have the letter? Let's take a look at the letter of October 25th, 2007. Because what the planning director says first is... You lack consistency with community plan. If you are seeking to build a single-family home...
Appropriate submittals, what did that refer to? Application for community plan amendment was not submitted. I think you need to be at the podium to speak.
Yeah, we can't, if it's possible.
The last sentence that says, if you submit a new application, said application will require consistency with the community plan in order to be processed. So go away and don't come back until you're consistent with the community plan. And a home is not consistent with the community plan. Is what
but
the planning
it says,
director says
an application for a community plan amendment was not submitted concurrent with the subject application.
That's an application for a change in the law.
And that was a possibility. Now, like I said, it may be a difference for rightness in allowing you to file a lawsuit. But the fact that you get a letter like that doesn't entitle you to run to court, file a lawsuit, and say, based on this letter alone, I can never use my property forever. That's the argument you're making, even though there were other procedures available.
As of October 25th, 2007, Your Honor, there actually was an application for a community plan amendment pending before the Planning Commission. The planning commissioners had met and discussed it in March of 2007. There was an environmental assessment prepared by Monokio and Hiraga, and preparatory to a request by the planning director to the planning commission for an amendment of the community plan for all 9 of the beachfront lots. So there was, in fact, in process, an application for a community plan amendment. As of March of 2007, it became abundantly clear, based on the statements of the planning commissioners, that they wanted to be able to take this land for a public beach without paying for it, that application would go nowhere. And in fact, it remains stalled to this very day. These plans are supposed to be amended every 10 years. This plan has been in effect since 1998 without amendment.
So explain again how the other homeowners, without an amendment to the plan, got their houses built?
Because the planning director unilaterally decided that he could disregard the law. The planning director issued exemptions to the Larsons and the Altons. And those exemptions said...
What about the other homeowners?
The others had received them earlier, before the confiscatory regulations took effect.
They all received exemptions. Every homeowner who built a home on those lots received exemptions.
You need an exemption to build, yes. So, I see that my time has run out.
You can go a little further if you'd like, but it's up to you.
I'd like to reserve the balance of my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, very well. Mr. Bilberry, we'll hear from you at this time. Bring the mic up again. It helps us to hear.
Yes, sir. Thank you. First of all, I think you have to recognize that the letter, which is blown up here for you to see, is irrelevant to this claim. It's absolutely irrelevant. And that's because they argued based on a land use enactment that occurred in 1998, it was illegal to build out there. They've also pointed out that the director of the Department of Planning had no alternative, and it was mandatory for him to issue this letter declining to process their application because it was illegal to build there based on an enactment that occurred in 1998. So that's the most salient fact in this case that a jury could have recognized, from which everything else followed regarding their ruling.
Okay, would you help us with that? What would the jury, I'm sorry, could you complete that thought? How would the jury have analyzed it then?
Absolutely. The jury would have concluded that your property wasn't, assuming their arguments, wasn't deprived of all economically beneficial use when this letter came out. Your property was deprived of all economically beneficial use when you bought it.
And it was on the market twice, and didn't they get an offer?
Yes, they got an offer for $4.5 million on February 2002.
And theoretically, their property was in the same situation because it was still under those same two things, those two regulations, both when they bought it, when it was listed, and when they got the offer, and when they filed the lawsuit.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Your Honor.
But, Mr. Bilberry, do you want to address the issue? And I may be misstating it, but it's my understanding that Mr. Beeman's position is that where you have zoning that clearly conflicts with the community plan, the zoning takes precedence. The community plan is unenforceable.
My understanding of community planning, and I've had extensive discussions with the director about this, is that it is a tool for land use planning. It is not a regulatory enactment subject to enforcement. And that, in fact, is a holding in the Pono v. Molokai Ranch case, which this court...
Well, if I'm following you, wouldn't that mean that zoning is a legislative enactment and therefore would control?
Yeah, absolutely. And the zoning in this instance was a hotel resort, which allows for single-family residential use.
So then I think the argument is that therefore zoning controls and the permit should have been granted.
Yes, correct. But the problem with this particular application was, as we've laid out in our papers extensively, is they did not provide the required submittals to allow the director to do the assessment to determine whether they were entitled to the exemption on the one hand.
Are you still arguing ripeness?
No, Your Honor, no. But I want to point out the claim became ripe again when they bought the property, because the enactment that they claimed distressed the property was enacted in 1998, the park designation.
Wait a minute, you moved to dismiss based on ripeness. That's why it came up once before, right?
No, the dismissal, yes, correct, Your Honor. Right, but let me put it this way. How can a claim which accrues, or let me back up.
Yes, the notice, but you know, the judge did instruct that the fact that a landowner may know about a regulation before the landowner purchased the property does not prevent the landowner from proving a regulatory taking, yeah. And that's based on the Palazzolo case, right?
I disagree with that, right. Sure. Palazzolo also says that if there's any significant development value shown to the parcel after the alleged taking, then you don't get to bring a Lucas claim for total economic deprivation. And in this instance, because they've argued that the planning director had to issue this letter because he had to follow the law because of the inconsistency, they can only be arguing, and the jury would have clearly understood that what they're saying is that the 1998 enactment of the community plan with the park designation is what caused the deprivation.
What about the issue of commercial use of the property? Mr. Beeman says there was no evidence in the record to support the possible commercial use of this property. What's your response to that?
My response to that is their own expert put on testimony regarding the use of the property for a single family residence post the alleged deprivation in 1998. Again.
How so? I understood Mr. Beeman's view is that there were numerous objections to that testimony. At the end of the day, he had to agree to disagree. The expert agreed to disagree with you about the applicability of the covenants, I believe.
Yeah. Your Honor, I apologize because I really ducked your question there.
No.
Before we get to talking about commercial use, their expert said 9 years after the alleged deprivation in 1998 that this property is worth $7.2 million for use as a single-family residential property. And what you have to realize is that if this letter does not constitute the taking, that is not the date of the taking, because they're saying the director had to follow the law. Well, if the law was enacted in 1998, then the date of the taking would have been 1998, or in this instance, the date they bought the property in February of 2000. So they bought a property that was already subject to the regulation which they claim was distressing it. Then basically what happened was after they held on to it and did nothing with it, because Mr. Beeman says, didn't want to give a 40% of his land, what he was basically being asked to do was just offer a viewplane, public access and a viewplane. Eventually they asked the director for this letter, knowing what the result was going to be under their argument, Your Honor. I'm not conceding that in 1998 this legislative or this regulatory, or no, this community plan enactment caused total deprivation of the property. We aren't conceding that at all. But we're going with their argument. And their argument is, in 1998, a community plan designation of this parcel as park made it illegal to build there. And that is why our property is worthless, because it's designated park. That came in 1998. The fact that they asked for a letter in 2007, ostensibly saying that, is irrelevant. And the problem is, why did it occur in 2007? Why not just wait for another 30 years and then ask the director to tell you what you believe is the case with this property, right? I mean, the problem is the case became ripe when they bought the property, because that's when it was distressed. And if you go with this, that the letter is the actual date that the claim became ripe, then basically you're vitiating the statute of limitations completely.
And they actually filed their complaint less than a month after this.
Yeah.
Without going through
The exemption process.
Exemption process.
Right. And that's something that was available to them. And let me just point out, after they basically told the jury that a 1998 enactment distressed this property and caused it to lose all value, all use, then the jury heard evidence, that 2 years after that, the Leones bought this property for $3.5 million. 2 years after the alleged deprivation, and then they heard that 4 years after the alleged deprivation, the Leones got an offer to buy the property for $4.5 million, 4 years after the alleged date of the deprivation. And then they heard that on May 29th, they got another offer for $4.6 million. Another, that's 4 years after the alleged deprivation. And then they heard that Leone's own expert could get up in front of them and say, I valued this property. I'm a professional appraiser. I appraised this property on October 25th, 2007, the date of this letter, and in my professional opinion, this property is worth $7.2 million for use as a single-family residence.
Yes, but you know, the county did not object to the judge's instruction, which I believe is a proper statement of the law, that there is a difference between economically beneficial use and value. A property that has value may not have economically beneficial use. So the issue is the economically beneficial
use. The key word there is may.
Use, not value.
Yeah, but the key word there is may. And the property was shown to have economically viable use by their own expert. He said it could be used as a single family residence, and it's worth $7.2 million, 9 years after the date of the alleged deprivation. The jury could have said, of course that property has economically viable use.
But the jury actually didn't hear the evidence that exemptions were being granted as of 2012, right? Because that evidence was excluded, right?
They heard evidence that exemptions had been granted prior to 2003 because the Leones Council put that in front of them. Here's what happened. They were going to make an equal protection and a substantive due process claim. They were basically trying to make two conflicting arguments. On the one hand, we've got a regulatory taking that occurred when this legislative enactment was put in place in 1998. On the other hand, although the regulatory taking actually occurred when the director issued this letter, basically, by their argument, not violating the law. Because what they're telling you is that the director followed the law by issuing this letter, and the only way he could have not been liable for a taking under their theory is if he violated the law and allowed them to build. But that's their theory. That's not our theory. I mean, our theory is that you can get an exempt use. There are other homeowners out here who got that, and other homeowners before the Leones applied, and others who have since. Let me back up. They tried to bring an equal protection claim and a substantive due process claim based on the director's decision. The problem with that is equal protection as compared to who? The other owners. So they introduced evidence of these other owners who got this exemption, and they were apparently going to argue, but the Leones didn't get it.
Which case did you say it was that a community plan amendment, community plan is not law? It's not a regulation? What case was it that you said?
Oh, I didn't say it wasn't. Pono. Pono says that it cannot be enforced. Pono says that it can't be enforced. It's not an enforceable regulation. Or there's no private right of action. It's something along those lines.
It can't be enforced by the county? The county can't enforce its own community plan?
Well, if it's going to enact zoning, it has to comply with the community plan. In this case, as one of the justices has recognized, there was zoning already in place before the community plan was designated.
So you don't have any authority for an assertion that a community plan is not a regulation. It is a regulation that the county can enforce.
I'm sorry.
While we're on that point, I might point out that there was a county code that was passed that endorsed, in a sense, a community plan, because the county code said that there cannot be a development that is contrary to the community plan under the county code.
It's distinguished from an exempt use. And if we can get into the SMA rules, I can show that. But if I can just recircle here real quick. Back to the argument that was made regarding the... Let me just point out, again, the letter itself cannot be the date of the taking because they're saying that the director just followed the law.
Mr. Bilbrey, I've got, and I think this all started when I asked you the question about whether there's evidence in the record of commercial use. Could you just wrap that up for me? Because I've heard, certainly the court has heard your argument about the significance of the letter. So is there evidence in your view? Do you dispute the plaintiff's claim that there's no evidence in the record upon which the jury could have found there was a viable commercial use for this property?
Yeah, Your Honor, what I would say is there's no evidence in the record to show that a commercial use would not be permissible and would not be in demand and would not be able to occur. Their experts tried to argue and put forth statements and opinions that there would be no commercial use allowable, and that is, quite frankly, their burden. They have to show that. And they don't get to shift the burden to the county to show that there is commercial viable use until they prove total deprivation. And in this instance, the jury clearly didn't believe that they proved total deprivation. And I think we've discussed, I mean, 9 years after the alleged deprivation in 1998, their own experts said this property is worth $7.2 million produces a single-family residence. And we had a expert appraiser who was prepared to come in and say, in 2014, when he did his appraisal, it was worth 7.87, but that was excluded.
If it could be developed.
Yes, and it can. And our position is that it can be. And to circle back to your question, their experts said it's a beautiful piece of property. It's a scarce resource, and it's desirable. Their experts and their witnesses said, yeah, there's people down there all the time. Right? They populate this beach. It's a popular beach. It's a beautiful place. And these are the elements that are set forth in, I believe it's the Lovelady's case, which talks about showing commercial use. The standard is you have to show permissible use. You have to show that there's the property is suitable for that use and a demand for it. Permissible, yes. I mean, I think their own experts said, yeah, park can be done there. There was a dispute over whether county supervision meant that the county had to own it, but I mean, there are many ways that a park could be implemented on that property, even if it's held by a private individual. They could lease it, right? They could do concessions themselves. These are all things that the jury could have concluded. And the county supervision, in our view, means you get permission to do it, and you got to comply with the regulations. So it was legally permissible to do this.
What about the covenants? Would they have precluded a commercial use? Could the jury have concluded that the covenants didn't apply? Was that the jury's call?
Maybe, yeah, maybe, I don't know. At one point in this case, when we were talking about the covenants, we were told that they didn't apply by the plaintiffs.
Well, is there evidence in the record from which the jury could have concluded that the covenants did not provide a barrier to the commercial use of this
land? Well, the county had two lots down there. They heard about that, and those lots are being used for park purposes.
Is that commercial use? The county is the government. They're using it for a park purpose. So what's the question is, could there have been a viable commercial use in light of the covenants, and could the jury have, is there evidence in the record from which the jury could have concluded those covenants did not pose a barrier to that use? If indeed that's the correct question, so
yeah, again,
correct me if that's not the correct question.
No, I think you're on the right track. I'm following you. I thought you were taking it one step at a time. And the first is, again, it is legally permissible. And I guess that's where we were. The county has two lots down there, and they're both designated park. So the jury heard that, right? There's no reason why they wouldn't be able to conclude if a public entity can hold two parcels on this lot and use it for a park, why wouldn't a private individual? But look, and the scarcity of the lot and the demand is also something that they heard about. They heard about people being down there and engaged in recreational activities.
Did the jury hear about the 2011 tsunami and the debris line?
They did. They did. But again, it seems to me before we even get to that point, we have offers being made to purchase the property post the date of deprivation. I don't know how they get around arguing that the alleged deprivation occurred in 1998 when the enactment was passed.
And the evidence was really clear throughout the trial that amendments were possible.
That is another issue, and I don't know that I have time to get into the SMA rules, but the SMA rules are pretty clear, as is 205A-22, that it is a development if your property is if your proposed action is determined to be a development, that's when you have the consistency requirement with the community plan. An exempt use under both state law 205A-22 and 26 and the Maui County Code, the SMA rules, is an exempt use. Before you start doing analysis of development inconsistency, if you're exempt, you don't go any further. And it's pretty clear under both 205A and the SMA rules. If you look at SMA rule 12-202-12F, which is where they say the consistency requirement is imposed, and that's 12-202-12F5, before you get to 5, there are four other provisions in front of that, and the first one is the direct. These are the five options the director can make doing his assessment of a proposed use to determine whether it's exempt or whether it's a development. The determination of exemption is 12-202-12F1, right? You don't even get to the others if you're exempt, and the others are minor permit, emergency permit, major permit, and the requirement for consistency, which is 12-202.
How is development defined?
Is it's a non-exempt use.
What's the definition of development?
I have that.
I thought you conceded that a house was a development.
No, the 205A-22 specifically provides that a single-family residence which can be shown to have no significant environmental or ecological impact or cumulative impacts or effect or cumulative impacts is exempt. And the reason, I don't want to say the reason we're here today, but they didn't want to make that showing. There were known Hawaiian cultural remains on their lot. There was a shoreline which was fragile. They had their submittals didn't have anything to demonstrate that they had got a monitoring plan, a data plan, or a preservation plan for the known cultural remains. So they weren't demonstrating to the Department of Planning and the director that they were taking the mitigative measures, which is part of the proposed action. The proposed action is not just what you're going to construct, but what are you going to do to mitigate harm to the environment? They've got a shoreline, which is a fragile shoreline, which is known to erode. The shoreline survey they submitted with their application was 5 years old. You have to get a certified shoreline every year, and it has to be current. They submitted a 5-year-old certified shoreline. They knew that there were remains on the property. Is that my, that's my 10-minute
warning? 5-minute warning.
5-minute warning, okay. They didn't have a monitoring plan, a data plan, or a preservation plan for known human remains on the property. There was a whole host of things, and I can tick them off, that were a problem with this application, which precluded it from being assessed to be able to make a determination.
But their answer is that's not what the letter said.
The letter didn't
rely on those deficiencies. The letter said inconsistent.
It says you can also submit your application with appropriate submittals. And by the way, this is the letter their lawyer requested. Defense exhibits, we have pointed out that their land use lawyer testified at trial. I wanted this letter denying the application so I could make an appeal to the Planning Commission. And rather than do that to seek further review, they sued a month later. And by the way, a determination for an exempt use, if they're arguing the letter denies them an exempt use, which I'm not clear they're arguing, you can appeal that to the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission can tell you you're entitled to it. That doesn't involve a legislative act, because you're not asking to change the community plan. You're only asking for a fair determination that, yes, I have mitigated environmental impacts, I've shown I'm going to do that, and the director was wrong not to exempt me. But the reason they didn't go that route is because they didn't give the submittals necessary for the director to be able to assess whether they were going to have significant impacts. Shoreline, known cultural remains on the property, drainage studies they didn't do. Again, I've got a list here I can tick off. Give me just a minute to find it. Okay, the shoreline survey was 5 years expired. You got to have it current every year. The engineer's license under which the shoreline survey was issued was 5 years expired when they submitted it. Their proposed pool, fell inside the setback. It fell outside of the shoreline setback. They failed to provide a survey of dunes, coastal dunes on the property. They didn't have a flood development permit. They failed to provide a grading plan. They didn't provide any information for assessment of the viewpoint or shoreline access. They didn't have an application for a drainage report. Again, despite the existence of known Hawaiian cultural remains on the lot, they didn't have a data collection plan, a preservation plan, or a monitoring plan. They hadn't contacted burial council. You got to do all this before the director can determine whether you're in exempt use. They didn't even submit the filing fee with this application. So how could the director even begin to process that? And this is a land use consultant on Maui who they hired, who, as Justice has noted, had attained 24 prior community plan amendments for them. And he submits an application like this. They clearly were not looking to have their property approved under this application they submitted. They wanted this letter so they could go to the Planning Commission to file an appeal. Fair enough, but then they sued, right? And quite frankly, if they would have put this application in front of the Planning Commission and said we're entitled to an exempt use, they would have been told no, because they didn't have any of this information there for the director to be able to determine whether they were going to be mitigating harm to the environment by building this residential structure on a fragile beach in a known protected area. And again, the SMA rules provide for this. It's not illegal to build a single-family residence within the SMA under the SMA rules. Very clearly, under state statute, under the SMA rules, a single-family residence is exempt unless it's going to have cumulative impact and potentially a significant ecological and environmental effect. And given the application they submitted, there is nothing else the director could have concluded except that, yeah, this is going to be a problem, because they haven't shown us how they're going to mitigate harm to the shoreline. They haven't shown us how they're going to protect cultural remains. They haven't shown us how they're going to protect from flooding. They haven't done anything, right? The only option he had was to say, your property is a development, and in that instance, you have to be consistent. So that's the whole inconsistency argument, right? Not because it was an exempt use, but because basically what they gave the director was something that he could only conclude was going to be a development.
Is this letter a final decision?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think they could have applied for an exempted use and gotten their permits like everybody else did.
But it's been decided it's a final decision for purposes of rightness.
I have a little concern, because there's this continued reference to footnote 8 in the ICA opinion somehow saying that it's illegal to build at Palauea. Again, if that is the case, this claim became ripe when they bought the property, because the offending enactment or regulation or land use designation occurred in 1998. So they're saying since 1998, it's been illegal to build on this property. And they bought the property in 2000, so they bought it subject to that. Fair enough. Palazzolo says they can bring the claim. Palazzolo also says, again, any significant development value which can be shown as to that parcel post the date of deprivation doesn't allow you to bring a Lucas claim. So they can't stand here today and say, we proved the claim under Lucas. Their own experts say the property had value 9 years after the alleged deprivation, and it's worth $7.2 million because it can be used as a single-family residence. Right? They didn't provide anything post-deprivation, this alleged date of deprivation, to show you that there's diminution in value of the property. So this is kind of an arbitrary date. I mean, they could have held this letter or held the request for 30 years before making an application, in which case statute of limitations is completely vitiated. I mean, the claim is ripe in 1998. It doesn't accrue until they submit their application.
Or they could have resubmitted another letter with what they had requested they submit.
Yeah, that was an option available to them, absolutely.
But your argument, Mr. Burberry, Mr. Bilberry suggests that the parcel had value when it was purchased because entitlements could be gotten, notwithstanding the fact that it was inconsistent with the community plan.
Well, the only thing inconsistent with the community plan is a proposed development. And exempt uses doesn't have to be consistent. It's not a requirement.
Because under the SMA, it's possible there could have been an interpretation that it wasn't a development.
Yes. Yeah, well, again, there were other homeowners out there who showed they were mitigating harm to the environment. They got their appropriate shoreline surveys up to date. There were other properties, their neighbors, the Larsons, have cultural remains on both of the lots. The Larsons own two properties. They have cultural remains on both of them. They submitted preservation plans. Their architect drew up beautiful renderings showing how we're going to preserve these.
So in your view, the Leone's quest to be able to get a single family, not development, shall we just say home, is not necessarily over?
No, absolutely not.
Well, what's your response to their suggestion that the waves that hit in 2011 have made development of this property infeasible, and that the burden of that loss, I guess, falls upon the county, not upon them?
You know, they when they bought the property, they got a standard oceanfront property addendum, which said, you know, shorelines are subject to erosion and tidal floods. I mean, that's in the evidence. And so they knew that that was a possibility, and yet they sat on their hands and waited until they submitted this letter 9 years after they bought the property. I'm sorry, 7 years after they bought the property rather than develop it. I don't know how that's the county's fault. The options were available to them all the way up to this point. The option was available to them to get an exempt use, and they just elected not to do that. And as a matter of fact, in 2004, after beginning a process of application for permits, either an exemption or development permit, Doug Leone stopped work. He just ordered Lou McKeough, his planning consultant, stop all work. I don't want to give Foley the view plan he's asking for. And then they sat around for another 3 years, and the next thing they do was submit this application to get this letter. And their own lawyer and the planning consultant testified, yeah, this is the letter we wanted from them so we could appeal the process to the Planning Commission. And again, they didn't do that. So I'm not clear how the county is saddled with a tsunami affecting the shoreline affecting their property when they sat around for 7 years and didn't pursue options that were available to them to get exactly what they wanted, which was a single-family residential structure.
Very well. Anything further at this time? And of course, you have your cross appeal. We have the brief with regard to your cross appeal, so we'll have that under submission to the court.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for your time, Robert, and thank you for allowing us to come.
Very well. Thank you. Mr. Beeman.
Respectfully, we just heard a series of misrepresentations, misstatements, and arguments off the record. Everything you've heard about the incompleteness of the Leone's SMA assessment application is entirely off the record. The jury heard none of that. There is absolutely nothing in the record to suggest that there was anything wrong with the Leone's application. The suggestion that the Leone's own appraiser valued the property at $7.2 million is true. He made the assumption that you could build a home there. It's worth $7.2 million as of the date of taking if you can build a home. If you can't legally build a home, it is worthless. And there is absolutely no evidence in the record whatsoever that this property retained any residual value post-taking. With respect to the statement that there must be value because the Leone's received offers during the 2002 time frame and that the taking occurred in 1998, that is absolutely not true. As of 1998, you could build a home on a Palauea Beach lot. As of 2000, you could build a home on a Palauea Beach lot. In 2001, the Hawaii legislature amended the Coastal Zone Management Act to provide that the definition of exempt uses is subject to a catch-all, saying that if the exempt use may create an adverse environmental or ecological effect, then it is a development. It is not exempt. In response to that change in 2001, the director of planning for the County of Maui began requiring that the homeowners submit SMA assessment applications as a condition of their building. And beginning on January 9th, 2003, the new planning director said, I will not process applications if they are inconsistent with the plan and a house is inconsistent with the plan. So that's what happened. The taking occurs on October 25th, 2007. With respect to the suggestion that the Kihei McKenna Community Plan doesn't have the force and effect of law, this court's opinion in Guattry versus Blaine is directly to the contrary.
Right.
Guattry versus Blaine holds that under 205A26, you may not build a development if it is consistent with the county general plan or zoning, and on Maui, the community plans are incorporated by reference into the general plan, and therefore consistency with the plan is required. The plan does have the force and effect of law.
You said that Now, in the 1998 Kihei McKenna Community Plan designated the lots as parkland.
Yes.
And as my understanding of parkland is you can't build a single residence on it, a single family residence. But you just said that nothing prevented them from building it as of 1998. How is that so?
Well, that's right, because until 2001, the planning director is not required to conduct an independent assessment of the environmental or ecological effects of the proposed use operation.
But doesn't the community plan alone, designating it as parkland, prevent them from building a single-family residence?
Only if it's a development, and it's a development if it doesn't have an adverse environmental effect. In 1998, even if it had an adverse environmental effect, it's still not a development. So it's the 2001.
Wait, development language is used in the community plan or in the SMA?
I'm talking about the SMA law. That is, the 2001 change in the law in the Coastal Zone Management Act is what triggers the necessity for an environmental review. Until then, a single family residence that is not part of a larger development is automatically exempt. So it is it's the revocation of that automatic exemption in 2001 that puts the homeowner in this catch-22 situation that you see in that letter.
Are you suggesting that but for that amendment to the CZMA in 2001, if you had submitted a building permit application, forget the SMA, you could have gotten it under the community plan?
Yes, and homeowners did before 2001.
Notwithstanding the language that said that that a single-family residence was prohibited.
No, there is nothing in the plan that says a single-family residence is prohibited. The plan says that it is for park use. The determination as to whether a single-family residence is consistent with park use is a discretionary determination made by the Director of Planning. And that discretionary determination cannot be made under the rules, under 12.202.12.F5, if the Planning Director can't review the application in the first instance. So, if I may continue, the suggestion that that a commercial use would be viable or that the jury could reasonably have concluded that some commercial use is viable is absolutely not true. Mr. Whitney testified there's no commercial viable use available. And the law, specifically the Bowles case and other cases we cited in the papers, holds that in order to be commercially viable, economically viable use, means you've got to be able to generate sufficient money to pay real property taxes. And the Leonis are paying $68,000 a year in real property taxes. And so there's no expert who testified that you could make that kind of a...
Was there evidence as to the value of a single-family home on the residence?
Yes.
On the property?
Yes. If you can build a single-family residence on the land, the land itself, according to our appraisal...
I meant the value of the home, like the rental value or what it would cost to live in that home or anything like that.
Well, we proffered that evidence and unfortunately was excluded by Judge Cahill because Judge Cahill concluded that a single-family residential use, that is a house, is inconsistent with a rental use. That is, you can't rent a house. And for whatever reason, he interpreted the law that way. And so what we did was we redid our experts' projections to exclude rental income in making the valuation. But ultimately, the expert concluded that the magnitude of the Leonis' actual loss as of the date of taking was $12.5 million. That is, that's the difference between, as of the date of taking, reduced to net present value, what the Leonis would have expected to receive had they built a home and sold it versus what they actually ended
up. You know, these cases that talk about economically viable use,
yes.
Do they talk about the use as a residential home?
Yes. Palazzolo, for example, was a case where,
okay.
where the court said there's no taking because we conclude that the homeowner, Mr. Palazzolo, could build a house on the property and therefore there was no deprivation. So the cases do address those issues.
Mr. Beeman, your time's expired, but I'll allow you to wrap up with any closing points at this
Thank
point.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Your Honor, this case is more compelling than an ordinary Lucas case in that the county deliberately took this land without paying for it. The cases, Dolan, for example, hold that where there is a functional equivalent of an ouster of possession, the landowner's right to exclude others has not merely been regulated, it has been obliterated. That is the case for the Leonis. If you go to Palawaya Beach today, you will find three vacant lots being used by the public for access to that beach. Two the county bought and paid for, one they didn't. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you to all of our counsel here today. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Be tried. Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned until further notice.